recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Get on, man.
Yeah, man.
Loving you, man.
Drugs just hanging out on the table here in your abode.
I found half a drug pill. So it's only half a junkie. It had a 7-7 on the backside.
I'm going to look at a pill identifier here.
I know there are things like Quaalude was like, I don't know, 714 or something like that. They had like numbers on them.
Yep.
I'll see what the front, maybe at an R. You want me to get out of the trash can?
Okay, pill identifier. No, I kind of...
Oh, you got pill identifier.
Yeah, you seen these things?
No.
If the imprint is like 7-7.
You know why? Because I'm not an old Jew.
So, here's some 7-7s. What do you think the...
Let me look. I'm going to pull it out. Yeah. So I just turned around sitting at my console and found half a white pill, which was sort of football shaped or so. Let me see.
You talk, Drew.
Shape. I got the shape biconcave, biconvex, bow tie, capsule, character, diamond, D, egg, eight sided, elliptical. These are all the different shapes. Five sided, four sided, gear shaped, heart shape.
There's an S on one side.
Would it be an oval rectangle? Ovoid rectangle, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, ovoid rectangle. That's us.
Ovoid rectangle.
Okay, colors
7-7.
White.
7-7. Max Pat is worried because he was white. Sitting here last night, man.
Hey, man.
But he usually snorts his shit.
Is this a...
It's got an S with a 7-7 on there.
What are the imprints again?
It's you're looking at the thing, too. It's a 7-7, something 7-7. 7-7 is on the right. And then on the other side is an S.
Remember when we flew that 777 in from Denver, man?
Yeah, man.
That was cool, right?
Yeah.
That's what it's reminding me of. I don't know about you. All right. I'm going to jump to the phones here.
Okay. I'm guessing what this is.
Julian, 37, Minneapolis. 37, 7. Huh. What's going on, Julian?
Hey, guys. Sorry. Hey, guys.
Hi, guy.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. My voice is a little... I just got out of surgery yesterday. So I got a couple questions. The main one that had me calling you guys, because you kind of dealt with this in the past, is how to deal with,
Chris.
I guess, mainly your family when some of them, and you love them, and you think they're pretty smart, but they still kind of go for the woo science, you know, the fake herbal or, you know, nutritional stuff. And I got the doctor on the one hand telling me, so I got my gallbladder removed. And so my mom, my aunt, my sister are like, hey, your sister had gallbladder problems, and she just drank apple cider vinegar and went away.
Okay, so they want to feel like they're in control, right? They feel they don't have knowledge, so they get to be like a primitive native. Like, I'll throw the idol in the volcano and it'll get me control again.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to feel like they have control. They don't understand biology. They don't understand just sort of the basics. It's okay. It's just how they deal with it. You just got to be sympathetic and let them be.
Well, the issue is my aunt's a neonatal nurse practitioner, and my sister's going through nursing school. So,
but they're still chicks first.
No,
that's what Drew wants to say.
But maybe there's, you know, still things that I'd have to get a lot of detail about what actually happened here. Maybe they're giving you good advice. I don't know. Right? You can listen.
And my
to
grandma apparently did the same thing to where she had it and didn't want to do surgery and it went away. But I'm so glad I didn't listen to him.
So is this all about this is all about gallbladder. The whole thing is about gallbladder, right?
Yeah, yeah. They did it laparoscopic and he had to take it a hole twice as big. Because not only did mine have several large stones in it, but it was infected.
Yeah, that's
so. If I had listened to them, I could have died.
Well, maybe it's complicated. Actually, they're not way out of space. I mean, there's other ways to deal with gallbladder disease. But yes, I'm glad you did the right thing.
Well, I think we can agree on this, Drew.
Yeah.
There are many things where it's a good idea for, you know, when people talk about, oh, hey, you know, good nutrition and meditation and yoga and stuff like that. I'm not going to argue with them.
Of course not.
It's not going to hurt. On the other hand, it's not going to cure, you know, if you Is it going to remove a tumor that's in your neck? You know, right. But all right, but that's fine. So I think the story is do both. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Don't go do your Western medicine and then go meditate a little bit when you get home. You know,
all I know is I've been involved in a lot of research with the Prostate Cancer Foundation, and man, are the Chinese running away from the wisdom of the Orient. They cannot get far enough away from non-science. They are headlong into the real science in China.
Mm-hmm. We think we've done the research, Gary.
Okay. He's found it. Because I'm looking and looking and looking. I can't find it.
Gabapentin.
Oh, interesting.
Epilepsy medicine.
Not here. More of a nerve medicine or sleep medicine. Anxiety medicine.
Oh.
I believe him.
Oh, yeah.
It's also called Neurontin.
Oh. Oh, you threw it away. I could have taken it later.
Yeah. We use it. I use it a lot. It has a similar – acts in a similar place as Valium, but it has non-Valium-like effects. It's a good medicine.
What does it do?
Makes you less anxious.
Yeah.
It was originally developed as a seizure medicine, but no one uses it for that really anymore.
Is it good for going to bed?
Yeah, can be. Sometimes I'll use it for that.
Tell Max Pat to give my half back, man. I'll try it tonight. Oh, he already ate it.
I'm looking for pictures. It doesn't really look like Gabapentin's a little more oblong, isn't it? It's not quite so.
Show me a picture. I'll show you. There's
right.
The S.
Yeah.
Breaks
right,
in half. Got
all
the 7-7.
Yeah. All right, that's it.
Give me my stash back, dude.
And by the
Joe
way,
Bogart.
Let me go even further. The reason it's broken in half is that's a 600 milligram tablet. That's a big dose.
Yeah, and a standard
dose is 300. So somebody took 300 and left the 300 behind that you'll no doubt use tonight for sleep.
Now, are they taking it? God knows how many people's hands have been on this thing.
Right.
And I threw it in the garbage. I don't care.
You're a sewer rat.
I am.
Yeah.
But now, who's taking it? And who's it like falling out of someone's jacket or purse or something?
We had an unusually high number of guests on the after show last night, so there's I can think of at least five people who are in the studio who,
but would you take it but you wouldn't take it here, would you? Or maybe someone's a little nervous about being on the air.
Yes, was it somebody new? Anybody new? That
there were four or five people who are new people.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Somebody was dosing, Drew.
Yeah, I know. Well, at least they're using that. I sign off on Gabapentin. I know there's some weird press on it lately because people can't abuse it in very high doses, but it's a good medicine.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Anybody recovering in that group or coming off like post acute withdrawal kinds of stuff? It's a great drug for the first year of sobriety. Anybody in that group?
What do you mean a great drug for the first year of sobriety?
Because when you come off drugs when you're an addict, your brain is not right for quite some time. It's you still have all kinds of crazy symptoms, sleep problems, anxiety, mood disturbances, and Neurontin settles a lot of those symptoms. A lot. It really works well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird that it just sort of fell off.
Where was it?
Well, the thing that was weird is I've been sitting here for like 5 hours, and I'm shuffling papers back and forth and moving stuff around and hide nor hair of any kind of pharmaceuticals. And then I just walked out, walked in. I was just sort of sitting here.
Oh, this is one of these guys.
No, I'll tell you. I learned a valuable lesson many years ago in 1978 when I was sleeping at Ray's house and looking at his Frisky magazine.
Oh, God.
And his blanket, and his mom came in to wake me up and tell me to get off the floor and move me around. And I took the Frisky magazine, and I clutched it to my bosom. And
Frisky.
And she took she had the blanket, and she was trying to pull the blanket away from me to make the bed. And I was like going, no, I was hiding the magazine in, and she was going, let me make the bed, you know. And I was like going, no, I got it. I'll let it. And at some point, I just went like, okay, or something. And she like pulled the cover out, and somehow the magazine was like in the cover, and she spread the cover out and like did the whole thing, and then went, okay, good night. And she like left. And I was like, this magazine, which I had sort of balled up in this cover and was hiding her, like just magically never fell to the ground and never popped out and never anything. And then I like lifted the cover, and it was sitting there like on top of the, you know, the blow up mattress. And that's when I realized there's a power. Now hold on, Drew. Don't laugh.
But there's a piece that...
There's a power that's more powerful.
But there's a piece that young men don't ever experience today, which is the the cherish the young male with a magazine with naked women in it.
Yeah,
they don't cherish it. That was your lifeline. That was your connection to the universe.
But the fact that she could, that Irene Oldhofer could make the bed and never have that frisky magazine fall onto the ground.
That's God looking out for you.
Right. But it also gave me a sense that things could sort of just not be there and then sort of be there. And you didn't have to go, well, who came in here? What happened in between?
With her,
you
know what I mean? Like, with her German accent?
God damn it.
Did she have a German accent?
Oh, she was great. She was great. She would yell at everyone in German. And she would cuss everyone and just...
Oh, it's so good that Ray got a second language out of it, too.
They would just sit in that little apartment and just chain smoke, you know. Both parents, you know. I mean, that's back when it's like someone... They'd be sitting in an apartment. They'd just be both sitting there on the sofa just smoking away.
Now,
you know,
to be fair,
TV.
They were like running away from Second World War, right? Is that what happened? Probably, right? My point is, what's your parents' excuse?
Well, I don't know. Were you and I talking about like how? Also, you know, there is a sad thing. I don't know if you probably don't run into this, but I've run into this before.
Go ahead.
Like, there's people in your lives. You know, you come in and out of your life. Or some people you work with, or you're friends with, or whatever, and you have these conversations and they tell you about, you know, my dad, he drank a little too much and he he wasn't really there emotionally for the family. And then, you know, my parents got divorced when I was probably in the sixth grade. And my dad, like I said, he drank and he kind of chased skirts a little bit. And he didn't have the entrepreneurial spirit or whatever. He wasn't really like a traditional dad or whatever. And
Chris's dad.
Well, you build a composite.
Yeah.
You build this composite up of this dad. Yeah. And it's kind of in your head, like, that guy had a bad dad too, you know, whatever it is. But then you start talking to him a little bit.
The actual dad.
No, you start talking. No.
No, I'm at the dad of the friend.
You're talking to the friend a little bit. Right. And you start going like, yeah, I wanted a dog when I was growing up, but never had a dog. And they're like, yeah, we had four dogs.
Right.
And you're like, we had four dogs? Well, not all at once. We had Shemp, you know, when I was born. And then, you know, Frisky, he died. And then when I was seven, he was a golden retriever. And then I was seven, Frisky. Then he was when I was seven. And then he was about junior high. And then we had a chocolate lab named Mitzi, you know. And it's like, oh, he had a bunch of dogs. I'm like, yeah. And then, I have to kick some tires. Like,
but
did you have a basketball hoop? Oh, yeah, my dad put one up on the garage. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but
a
listen,
basketball hoop. You had a dog. And then they start telling you stories like, where did you play? Well, we had a decent-sized property. And they're like, but did you have a clubhouse? Well, we went to camp, and when we came home, my dad had built us this, like, I don't know if it was a tree house, but it's kind of like a fort, you know, like a freestanding, whatever. And they're like, okay, world's worst dad. Like, it doesn't sound. I'm sure the man had some flaws, but he built you a fort, put up a basketball hoop, you had dogs, like in mini bikes and stuff. Like,
Isn't it interesting how people, you can divide people down into somewhat, there's different binary classes that you can kind of put people into. And if you have them strictly in the binary classes, you miss the whole person. But I think what you're zeroing in on here is alive versus not, like engaged versus not, like living versus not.
Your parents were not really living. And they had built you a fort.
Yeah, but this dad was living, but he was living a little too much. He's like drinking too much.
Right.
Your parents not living.
It's a good point.
So they weren't alive, so you get nothing. You get he got stuff because they were living.
Yeah.
But he also got some other stuff came along with that.
Yeah. Always said I was a dog in a basketball hoop away from a five. Could have had a five. Just a hoop and a dog. That would have covered a lot.
Food? Wouldn't that have been good?
Well, now you're getting into the 6, 7, and 8 range.
Oh, yeah. That's
you know what I mean?
It's a Corolla. You're right. Yeah.
You're right. All right. Drew, you got some business there?
I do. True Car, buddy. Mm-hmm. That's right. You might not know what all these different sort of price and lists and MSRPs and invoices and dealer prices. They're meant to confuse you. That is why True Car has true price. Very simple. True Car gives you true price. So you know exactly what you pay. So that price includes fees, accessories, no surprises. It's easy. It's a streamlined buying experience. When you get to the dealership, You know the TrueCar price is a great price because TrueCar shows you what other people's paid, people paid for the car you want. So you know it's a competitive price. You also know the TrueCar certified dealers set that true price competitively because they compete amongst themselves to get your business. So it's a good price. You're educated because you know the pricing pattern you're in, where you live. All the fees and accessories and everything are all included, so it's a true price. And once you lock it in, it's for an actual vehicle on the TrueCar certified dealer's lot. So it's very confident, very easy. When you're ready to buy, new or used, don't forget they have used cars as well, over a million in inventory. Visit TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
All right. Drew, did you have a basketball hoop growing up?
No.
Have a dog?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had sort of partial alive.
Did your dad ever like build something?
No. He would make me do gardening. That was the extent of the sort of engage with the hands.
He would make you do gardening.
He would do gardening. We would never pay for a garden.
Right.
The Rockefellers, you know, right? Mm-hmm. So we had to do it, and including the watering and stuff. They wouldn't, you know, have to by hand everything. And we had lots of ivy. So it was lots of
trimming.
Trimming with the clippers, you know. Mm-hmm. And no electrical or gas. No. That's dangerous. So yeah. We had the clippers, and it was a lot of hauling stuff around, a lot of cans being dragged around, and I'd get, you know, 25 cents or something.
You got an allowance?
Some sort of reinforcement. No allowance. Fee for service.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
No base. No baseline. $2 a week or any of that stuff.
No.
Yeah.
So, but, it's all right. I'm actually not complaining. I didn't really mind it that much.
No, it's good that you learned to do all that stuff, right?
Yeah. Nah. I don't know what I got out of it, but once school kicked in, then there was no way I could do all this stuff. So that was good. So there was it got replaced by other work. You know,
too
what I mean?
Busy at school.
Yeah.
Too much homework.
Yeah.
Too much responsibility involving school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I had that. Now, how did your wife do with your kids growing up? Did she get them to do chores?
We tried.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I mean, the dishes was, you know, the kitchen was sort of the main environment for that, and bedrooms, you know, do your bed, clean your room, that kind of stuff. It was never bad. They would self-start sometimes. It was just not super consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Not super consistent. And the same thing. They were really busy with the school stuff. I mean,
how do you get people to be orderly?
I think it has.
That's a weird organization. Is a weird thing.
Let me tell you. Look, and some of it is genetic, right? Jordan, orderly from birth. I mean, his room is like, it's like, you know, you could bounce a quarter off the sheet all the time. Mm-hmm. Never a thing out of place or anything. Douglas, hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Until he started law school.
Uh-huh.
And now everything is exceedingly ordered and structured and stuff in his life now. A turnaround, complete. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a survival thing for some people. Like when you got to do it, you will do it. And once you do it and it becomes a thing, it's automatic then. Because you kind of miss it. If you become disorderly, you become inefficient, disorganized, and you can't do what you're used to doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my daughter's sort of in between. She's always been pretty good. Pretty good, though she will explode her shit all over the place just to make everybody miserable.
I was just to make people miserable. I used to be wildly disorderly.
Yeah.
I mean, my room was always, everything was always a mess. Everything was just sort of chaotic. Yeah. Everything's whatever. But once you get into the order, it's a little bit intoxicating. It also sort of becomes a challenge, like an efficiency challenge. Like, let's see how fast we can go through this lake and how little a ripple we can make in the water. Like, let's just see how smoothly and how quickly.
Do you need to be motivated?
We can do it.
Towards some ends? You just have to get something out of it? Or just the pleasure of seeing a smooth lake?
The motivation is not – I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, which was the following. I had a car. I was taking it to a race, and in order, and the car got taken out. It got a new engine in it, kind of a high powered engine, and it got taken out to the street for sort of a test run, just on the street in front of where we are.
Yeah,
so the guy's going to literally just go up and down the street to see how it shifted and the clutch worked and stuff like that. If I explain to you how the clutch worked in the day or two?
You did a couple of days ago. Oh, yes. Okay, thank you.
And the car was
mostly was impressed with the solenoid and the starter, though.
The car was making so much power that it actually kind of twisted the car a little bit,
like a fishtail kind of.
No, it twisted the car.
Wow.
I don't fishtail and give a shit about it. Making so much power that it twisted the car. It's a unibody car. It bent. It buckled a little in the back. So we realize, we have to fix this to figure out a way to reinforce it. You know.
Yeah.
So I got a guy there, and he's a fabricator. And he's a master fabricator. And we figured out that the roll cage goes in the back, and the pickup points on the unibodied car, no frame. Car was in the back, that if we got underneath it and put a bar across it and blah blah blah, we could tie the roll cage into the thing and the thing and the thing.
Yeah.
And I said, that's good. And then I said, all right, now look, since we may be making a show out of this or an episode or whatever, I want to film it. I want to film the car and the damage to the car. I want to film this thing that we're having to fabricate to fix it. And I want to see the thing, you know, before it goes in, a shot of it. And then we'll have a shot of it like up in place and welding. And just in case we want to kind of tell that part of the story, sure. You know? And so yesterday I called the one guy, Tom, who was at the shop, and I said, hey, before that part goes up in there, or if it's going up in there today, I don't know, we're putting it up today or welding it up or whatever, make sure you tell Brian at the front of the shop, the guy at the camera, grab some B-roll. Grab some B-roll, that thing, like, you know, holding it up or on the ground, and we see the shape of it, and now then we'll see it being welded up into place when the car and the hoist, whatever. So then it was about 10 in the morning, just walking Philly cheesesteak. And I walked in at about 12, and the thing was bolted up into place, about 10 bolts. And I walked up, and right when I walked in, the guy who'd fabricated it said, hey, if you want to get, you know, a good shot of this thing, I can unbolt it if you like. And I said, you didn't get a shot of it before it got bolted up? And he went, no. And I said, Tom, remember I called this morning and I said, get a shot of it? And he went, yeah. And I said, did you tell Sean? And he went, yeah, I told him. And then Sean went, he didn't tell me anything. And then I said, well, I called you at 10 this morning. Look, it's 12. It's been 2 hours, not 2 days. I said, go get Brian, get a shot of it. And Sean kept saying, I'll just unbolt it. I can unbolt it. I can just pull it down. It was 10 bolts. But
there was now a ripple in the lake.
Right. The guy's fast. The guy's good. He's like, oh, I'll just pull it off. I'll just take it off. And I was like, no, because it's bolted in place now. And the reason I called at 10:15 is so we could get a shot of it before it's in place. Now it's in place. And he said, it's just a few minutes. It's just a few minutes. But I'm kind of looking at the car's up on the hoist. Someone would have to get up top and hold it up top. You'd have to get underneath or whatever. And he said, he said something like, it's just a little step backward. I said, I don't want to take a quarter step backwards. Not if we can avoid it.
Yeah.
And we could avoid it.
Yeah.
And the reason I called was to avoid it, but we couldn't. And now we're here and I'm moving forward. And the idea of I'll just unbolt it and take it down, we'll take a picture of it and we'll put it back up and bolt it back up again, drives me nuts.
Yeah.
It's the reason we have phones. It's the reason.
It's also probably one of the reasons that you're so good at construction, because you make sure you're planned out in right sequence so you don't go backwards.
And also, I have a whole bunch of stuff I see in my head. Like, I'm just walking the dog and I go, I better call Tom and make sure he knows to film that thing before he bolts it up, because otherwise I'm going to get there and it's going to be bolted up. And when it then, you see, I would be fine if I just showed up and it was bolted up and I went, oh, what's going on? And they went, oh, we're bolted up the cross member. And I went, oh, yeah, we probably should have shot it before. But I knew that.
Yeah.
And I conveyed it and it still happened. And now I'm bummed. Now, everyone thinks that's a weird quality.
It's a quality. I wouldn't call it weird.
Well, no, it's a quality they disagree with.
You disagree with that at your own peril, because that's construction, right? It's building things.
I would argue it's kind of life. Life.
Two other things I saw in my son, in addition to the organization. This is just, you know, for the sake
so
of listeners.
So for me, I don't want to go backward.
Yeah.
I don't want to go backward.
All right. He said two things. One, he said, oh, my God, being around smart people makes me ups my game dramatically.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've said that forever. I think that's the reason you go to certain schools and things, because when you're around smart people, you come up to that level, number one. And number two, he said, wow, I thought I was learning a lot of Vanna. I knew how to study, but now I know how to study. Now I get it. Now I really know how to, you know. And that's the other thing. You can expand and expand, you know, what you can do. You know what I mean? But you have to you have to stress yourself. And it's not today's world. That ain't easy to come by. You have to find ways to do that.
Hold on a second, Drew. Let me tell you about Off the Vine with Caitlin Bristow. Caitlin Bristow is opening a bottle of wine and talking about The Bachelor. That's right, Bachelor Nation. Listen up every Tuesday and Thursday on Podcast One. Download Off the Vine with Caitlin Bristow at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. All right, let's get to it. No, and I agree, and there's the part. I'll tell you, there's something that always drives me nuts. What drives me nuts is not the person that's not stretching and expanding.
Yeah.
It's their friend who stands next to them and goes, oh, you shouldn't have to do that. No, that's insane. No, you shouldn't.
No, Sonny, go in the water. Don't go in the water. No, give him a towel.
It was, great. Like, I've had these conversations where it's like, I'm standing there with Bill Simmons and his wife, and Bill's going, my kids are 8. They don't need nannies. They're fine. And Lynette's like yelling at him going, what are you talking about? Of course they need, like, I've had it every single direction of the person trying to talk the other person out of the, my thing is if somebody said, I'm going to do 10 pushups, I wouldn't go, no, I just go, why not make it 20?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
It's a better way to go. Now, look, I think, you know, if somebody says, look, I don't buy sweaters, I knit my own, and I might go, man, eh, should go to Old Navy.
Yeah.
Save yourself some time. No, I'm not talking about going man in the wilderness. I'm not talking about going full Jeremiah Johnson here, Drew.
Full. You got a nice timely reference.
Does Jeremiah Johnson or Man in the Wilderness mean anything to you, too? Matt Fondalier, it should, because he's a film guy.
Yeah, I know Jeremiah Johnson.
You do?
I've heard that name before.
How about...
There's like a song that goes with it.
Oh,
probably.
Yeah, what about the... who's the other guy? The guy with the beard. The guy around the same time.
Grizzly Adams.
That name, anything?
That one I know.
Really?
But I don't know much about it. It's a reference from... I know it from Happy Gilmore.
I'm impressed.
I'm impressed. No, I'm impressed that they've dumb Adam Sandler movie.
No, I'm impressed that they know these two names from 50 years ago.
Matt is a film guy,
yep.
And Matt is he is obligated to study the works of the Jeremiah Johnsons.
Wasn't Jeremiah Johnson a TV show?
And the Man's in the Wildernesses.
Yeah, Man's in the Wilderness.
Jeremiah Johnson could have been Robert Redford, or that was Man in the Wilderness. I think that was
Robert Redford, Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah,
right. Two movies came out, like, you know, when those two volcano movies came out, like, at 8 month period, they had like two Trapped in the Wilderness movies came out, like, in a 9 month period, like 1973. Oh. Yeah. What year were those two movies? 71 and 2. Yeah. But they still could have been 4 months apart. I was like, Jeremiah Johnson, Trapped in the Wilderness. And yeah.
There's a little piece of history right there in the 70s that gets hidden by all the bullshit, which is everything was natural and Rocky Mountain High. And Bob Denver, John Denver was, you know, was sort of.
You know how John Denver died?
I do know that.
You know how he died.
Accident, right?
an experimental plane accident.
Ooh.
It's a weird way for that guy to go, right?
Yeah. Was he a pilot?
He's a pilot.
Wow.
He bought an experimental plane.
Weird.
It had a stupid little kind of hitch on it, and that in order to switch from the regular fuel tank to like the auxiliary fuel tank, it was like a kind of a bad design. It had like the auxiliary fuel tank had to switch. The switch was like behind, up and behind or whatever. And it was a sort of weird design or bad design, and he just kind of hopped in it and was taken out for a flight, like over the bay in San Francisco or that area, and it started to run out of gas, and he couldn't reach around and like find the switch.
Huh.
This is a nothing item, kind of 50-cent item, kind of. Like if someone had located the fuel switch up front or in a better place, it would have switched it. It's a weird.
Where's the behind?
It's where's our propellers behind?
Yeah, where?
All right. Let's tell you guys. Go to amcroll.com, find out. Live shows everywhere coming up in Cleveland, coming up in the great state of Detroit.
The Detroit.
I should sit down and tell you about all the places I thought like were states and weren't cities and what
tomorrow.
Cities were in where. And
you've already told us about the Cincinnati and the Detroit.
Yeah, but there's a lot of ground to cover. All right.
Probably the Philadelphia.
Go ahead, you. I didn't know it was in Pennsylvania.
Go to Dr. Drew.com, check out the family of pies. Check it out.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Dr. Drew saying, mahalo.